Good to have you with us tonight. If you've been paying attention here or at home, we are doing a series called In Exile. We're talking about the idea that the world we live in is not terribly unlike a lot of the exiles in the Bible who went through being displaced and being placed into foreign cultures that didn't always respect their faith. Well, didn't always, didn't even a little. The idea that when you're in that kind of a situation, when you're choosing to not sort of isolate and keep yourself inside the walls of a safe church-like organization, and you're going to go out there in the big wide world and talk with people, it's important to understand how that's going to work. The fact that we talked about Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel, talked about the fact that they have to negotiate a way to be faithful in the middle of this kingdom that they're forced to serve. So they had to somehow balance obedience and deference to the king, who completely does not follow any of the things that they've been taught to believe, while at the same time still honoring God with their life. And so we talked about that, and we talked a couple of weeks ago about crossing the line, the fact that there comes this day when you have to say, no, I can't do that. For Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, it was, we don't want to go fall down in front of the idol in the desert that's like 80 feet high that looks like you, O king, you crazy dude. So the result of that is sometimes that it works out. In their case, it worked out pretty good, although they had to get thrown in the fiery furnace to figure that out. Sometimes it doesn't. But the important thing is understanding where the line is for you and knowing, okay, I'm going to choose where to draw that line. Last week, we called, if 2 weeks ago was crossing the line, last week was crossing the lion. In the case of Daniel, that's what ended up happening. And the thing that was cool about Daniel is that he did not do anything new to get himself in trouble. He didn't do anything new when he heard that the decree had been made that he could no longer pray to God for a certain period of time. He continued to do what he always did, and that was to pray to God. He just continued on. And the result of that, of course, is that God protects him from lions, which is cool. And this 80-something-year-old man has one more opportunity to show God's goodness in his life. So we're going to move off of the book of Daniel this week and talk about one of my other favorite exiles from the Bible, a guy named Joseph. And this I have called surprise endings. The life of Joseph is one of the most unexpected surprise endings ever, even though the beginning of Joseph's life, he thinks he has a pretty good understanding of how it's going to go, and he has a vision of what his life is going to be like. And his vision ends up coming true in exactly the opposite way that he could ever have imagined it ever happening. Nothing is better than a surprise ending in a movie. And nothing is worse, I think, than a movie when there's nothing to learn, right? You're 5 minutes into the movie and you go, okay, I know how this is going to happen. And there's a bad guy and he's like, we're going to have a scene that shows that he's really bad. And then the good guy is going to beat the bad guy. And then it's all going to get resolved. And he's going to ride off into the sunset and everything's going to be perfect. There's nothing better than a movie that you actually don't know how it's going to end, or that movie that right at the very end throws you in this just huge surprise, like you're watching The Empire Strikes Back and you find out that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father, and you're like, whoa! And like, I was old enough at the time. I'm old enough to have lived through a world that didn't know that Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's father, which is just crazy. And just the shock and the panic of people, and we didn't have the internet, so it was just a word of mouth thing, and some people would say, is it really true? And others would say, I'm not sure, and then we had to wait like 3 years to find out, yeah, it's really true, and apparently he has a voice that doesn't match his face. But anyway, so there's nothing better than a movie with a good surprise ending. My favorite surprise ending of all time has to be The Sixth Sense, where you find out that the main character is actually dead the whole time, which is super awesome, which made us all think M. Night Shyamalan was a really, really good director, which he turned out to be for two more movies, and then now someone should take away all of the money that they give him to ever make movies ever again, which is sad because he could have been really cool. The life of Joseph is this study of surprises. We can't read the entire thing because it's four or five chapters long, but I'll just summarize for you. We'll read a little piece of it. So he starts out life. He has a dream. Of course, he has a bunch of older brothers, and his dream is that his brothers would bow down to him. In fact, he doesn't have this dream once. He has it a couple of times. And like, I suppose if you're the youngest of a bunch of brothers, this would be a dream you have often that you really think about. You're like, oh, wouldn't it be great if all my brothers thought I was cool, but they don't and they hate me. His problem was that his father loved him more than his brothers and made it really obvious. So he just put a big bullseye on the kid's back. It's probably a common dream for him, but this was a God dream, and he had this dream more than once. Unfortunately, he told everyone about it. So he was that kid. He was like, oh, guess what, everybody? I had this dream, and then you guys are all bound down to me. Nah, nah. So the result of that in this day and age is probably that your brothers might give you a beat down, or your brothers might say some stuff to you, or your brothers might pull a few pranks on you. The result in that day was a little more serious. They beat him, threw him in a pit, and then sold him to some slavers that were coming by, and then faked his death, and that's just awesome. That's that's the life of Joseph. Things are going well. So he begins with this God dream in his life, and yet things are not going well. He goes to Egypt as a slave. Even as a slave, he excels. He's given leadership. He is he's put in charge of Potiphar's house. And here he is in Egypt, a culture that he doesn't agree with or believe in or know anything about. And yet God gives him favor with all of these people. Unfortunately, he is falsely accused of something he didn't do, and then he is thrown into prison. So he's gone from having a dream and a really nice jacket, apparently, to being beaten, thrown into a pit, sold into slavery. His father thinks that he's dead. No one's coming for him. Things were getting a little bit better. Now they're considerably worse, and he's in prison. In prison, of course, he excels and is given leadership, too. God just has put this thing in his life that everywhere he goes, he leads. It's just a natural gift and a talent for him. And then he is in prison, and things are going okay. And he's in prison with some guys who are in prison for a short time. One of them, he has a dream and interprets it and says, good news, the dream says that you're going to get out of prison really soon. That's great. The other guy, he interprets his dream and he says, bad news, your dream says that the king's going to kill you really soon. But both of those turn out to be true. So Joseph says to the guy who didn't die, hey, remember me when you're out of prison. Of course, the guy doesn't, until one day Pharaoh has a dream years later. And his dream is troubling and no one can interpret it for him. And finally, he brings attendants remembers that Joseph can interpret dreams. So they get him out of prison. They bring him in. He interprets the dream. And the immediate response of Pharaoh to, wow, you interpreted my dream, is, I am going to put you in charge of all of Egypt. Imagine for a second just how insane that actually is. Joseph is from a nomadic group in Canaan. He's been sold as a slave. He's been a slave for at least a decade. And he's been in prison for we don't know exactly how long. And yet Pharaoh says, because you can interpret this dream, I'm going to put you in charge of the entire kingdom, and you're going to make sure that we survive the famine that you predicted was coming. Genesis chapter 41, verse 41. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took a signet ring from his finger, put it on Joseph's finger. He dressed him in robes of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and people shouted before him, make way. Thus he put him in charge of the whole of Egypt. Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all of Egypt. Skipping down a couple of verses, Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. So after what's probably at least 15 years, we don't know exactly how old he was when he was thrown in the pit, but we know that he was 30 years old when he becomes the second in command of Egypt. Think about that path in his life. Think about all the things that had to happen for him to get there. It makes me think of what is probably my life verse, if I had one. And it's in Proverbs chapter 16, verse 9. In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. In their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. And I think about this a lot. I think about this verse, and I think about my own life, and I think about the meandering course that God has had me on. And like Joseph, when I was younger, I had dreams and visions and ideas of what God was calling me to do, to do what I'm doing right now, to stand in front of people and to teach and to preach and to do all those kinds of things. But also, God put a lot of other things in my path as that happened, as my life went on. And just like Joseph, Joseph gets a dream that his brothers are going to bow down to him. His natural tendency then is to say, hey, by the way, guys, God says I'm in charge of you, apparently, and at some point you guys are all going to bow down to me, and that's how life is going to work. So he immediately begins to tell people about it. He says, this is how it's going to happen. And yet he has no idea how long it'll take. He has no idea the way that God will do it. He has absolutely no idea the suffering and the testing and the temptation and the trials and all the things that have to happen for him to get where God told him he was going to go in the first place. And it's almost an afterthought. All these things happen to Joseph, and there he is in Egypt. And finally, because of this famine, his family has to come from Canaan to Egypt to try and buy food. And Joseph, in a couple of chapters of the Bible that I find amusing and kind of confusing as well, Joseph spends a couple of chapters just absolutely messing with them, and because they don't recognize him. And he plants like a silver cup in their stuff and accuses them of stealing it and just all kinds of crazy things. But this dream that Joseph had comes true way, way later in his life in a way that you could not have possibly scripted or planned. If you had said to Joseph, go and find out a way for your brothers to bow down to you, he would have taken the things he knew, the world that he knew, and he would have tried to become a leader. He would have tried to become authority. He'd be try to become number one in that world. And yet God takes him to an entire other world. I mean, almost another planet in Egypt, a place he knows nothing about. And God uses that meandering path to accomplish the dream that he gave him in the first place. And we sometimes ask this question. This is one of the classic questions about God. Well, if God is good, then why do bad things happen to good people? If you look at the life of Joseph, that's a fair question. Besides being a little arrogant and kind of a punk when he was, you know, probably a teenager, so who wasn't? We don't see that he's a bad person. In fact, we see that he's a person of great character, and as he grows up in Egypt, we see that he does the right thing all of the time, and yet for at least probably 15 years of his life, for doing the right thing, he gets thrown in prison, falsely accused, forgotten all about in prison by people that he'd helped out, everything, you know, beaten and sold into slavery and lied about. So for everything that he has done and every bit of character in his life, the result is that something bad happens to him. But I think the reverse question is also a really good question. So we ask, why do bad things happen to good people? I often ask, why do good things happen to bad people? Because there are a lot of people in the world you look at and you go, wow, you're not a particularly good person. And yet, it seems like all kinds of good things are happening to you. And if you look at Joseph's life and you say, well, all of these bad things have happened to him and he doesn't deserve it. You can also think of people who really don't deserve all of the good things that have happened in their life. So how do we sort this out? How do we figure out God's purpose and God's will and God's way in our lives? I was talking with a friend this week that is having a lot of really bad things happen to him. And he said, maybe it's just because of all the bad things I've done before. And I said, you know, that's a concept that we just don't believe in. Fate, karma, what goes around comes around. We actually believe in a God and an age of grace that we live in, where God says, I'm not going to do to you what you deserve, but I'm going to bless you and forgive you and open up my kingdom to you. So if you look at the life of Joseph, I think I draw a lot of principles out of it. We talk about, you know, this guy who ends up in exile, who ends up in a place he never planned to be, who ends up in a place that he wouldn't have gone to in a million years. There is no way, number one, in a million years, Joseph could have concocted a series of events that ends with a Jewish boy from Canaan ruling all of Egypt. That would never have been his plan. That would never have been the way that he accomplished the dream that God gave him. And yet, as he submitted his life to God, even through the most difficult things, God did what God wanted to do, and God took him on this path. He ordered his steps. The second thing I see is that in the middle of hardship, in the middle of things being difficult, is really sometimes hard to see what God is up to. It's really hard to understand why God is taking us that way. It's hard to understand why God allows sometimes bad things to happen. But the single defining truth hardwired into the heart of every exile, like Joseph, like Shadrach, like Meshach, like Abednego, like Daniel, who remains faithful to God, is this: that God is in control. God is in control not only of my life, because I surrender it to him, but God is in control of every life around me. God is in control of world events. God is in control of everything I can think of and see. And God is in control of the path that my life will take. Our lives are an example of God's goodness in hardship or in blessing. The fact that God allows Joseph to go through this meandering path and go through some difficult things, but in the end gives him the strength to get through it, that is an example to us of God's goodness, of God's grace, of God's strength, of God's power, God's ability to do things that absolutely can blow our minds. And we are proof that God is love, that God is for us, that God is on our side. And I think it's important that we carry that truth to the world, that the gospel is really insanely good news because we're not in the hands of karma or fate or the impersonal universe. That God is with us. The Bible calls this word Emmanuel, God with us. The idea that God is not distant, that we do not suffer alone, but that God walks through with us. And I can say that I believe with all my heart, and I have great confidence, that every step of my life has meaning, even when I don't see it, and even when I don't understand it. And you know, it also extends to those times in my life when I'm not being perfect, when I'm not doing everything exactly the way that I believe I should. God's grace extends to give every step of my life meaning. God's grace extends to make everything that I do have purpose. And as a recipient of God's grace, I extend this offer of meaning to everyone who is outside the knowledge of Jesus. When we talk to people about our faith, when we talk to people about where our hope comes from, we extend the same offer of purpose and meaning. And we're talking to a lot of people today, especially here in the Northwest where we live, who believe in concepts like, impersonal forces that somehow rule their everyday life, who believe in concepts like balancing the universe or fate or karma. We believe in an actual God who is actually a real person, who actually cares, who we can actually talk to, who we can have a relationship with. And before we kind of discuss a little bit tonight, as I was thinking about Joseph, and the Joseph story means a lot to me because I identify with not knowing how it is that God is taking you through the steps of your life to accomplish something. Because I've spent good chunks of my life knowing that God called me and knowing that God has a purpose for my life and watching my steps meander down paths that I never intended, that I never planned for, doing jobs I didn't go to school for, stuff like that. And yet God opens doors, and what can you say when he does? I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about Romans chapter 8, and I'll read it to you in the message, and then we'll do some table talk, and then we'll be done for tonight. We can be sure, Romans chapter 8, this is verse somewhere around 28, we can be so sure that every detail in our lives of love for God is worked into something good. God knew what he was doing from the very beginning. He decided from the outset to shape the lives of those who love him along the same lines as the life of his son. The son stands first in line of humanity he restored. We see the original and the intended shape of our lives there in him. So Jesus is the example of not only what we could be possibly someday, but what we were intended to be, how we were created to be. The son stands first in the line of humanity he restored. We see the original and intended shape of our lives there in him. After God made that decision of what his children should be like, he followed it up by calling people by name. You and me, every one of us. After he called them by name, he set them on a solid basis with himself. And then after getting them established, he stayed with them to the end, gloriously completing what he had begun. So what do you think? With God on our side like this, how can we lose? If God didn't hesitate to put everything on the line for us, embracing our condition, exposing himself to the worst by sending his own son, is there anything else he wouldn't gladly and freely do for us? And who would dare tangle with God by messing with one of God's chosen? Who would dare to even point a finger? The one who died for us, Jesus, who was raised to life for us, is in the presence of God at this very moment, sticking up for us. Other translations, interceding on our behalf. He is standing up for us. Imagine that. Jesus, the one who died, the one who rose again, is at this very moment at God's side, standing up for us. Do you think that anyone is going to be able to drive a wedge between us and Christ's love for us? There's no way. No trouble, no hard times, not hatred, not hunger, not homelessness, not bullying threats, not backstabbing, not even the worst sins listed in Scripture. None of this phases us because Jesus loves us. I'm absolutely convinced that nothing, nothing living or dead, angelic or demonic, today or tomorrow, high or low, thinkable or unthinkable, absolutely nothing can get between us and God's love because of the way that Jesus, our Master, has embraced us. And if we see our lives that way, if we see every day with that level of purpose that God did not spare anything for us. And if God didn't spare anything for us in sending his own son to set us free, then how much more will he not with him freely give us all things, as Paul says. And if we enter our everyday believing that God is for us and that everyone we meet, not only does God have a purpose for us, but God has a purpose for them. Not only is there meaning in my life today, but there is meaning in the fact that God put me in your path today. I had that conversation with somebody last week. I said, I believe that God has a plan for you, and I believe that God loves you, and I believe that God put me here today to just tell you that. So, some questions. And we'll talk about them, and then I actually won't come back for one last thing tonight. Think about the life of Joseph. Think about going from, the dream to slavery, to prison, and then to the fulfillment of the dream. Have you ever set out on one path in life and ended up somewhere unexpected? I have, a lot. Why? Fate, luck, God, your own choices? Talk about that a little bit. What do you believe about that? Tell a story of a difficult time you look back on now and see God's purpose in it. And there are some things you may have a difficult time now and you don't really know what God's doing, but that's okay too. It's okay to talk about that. How can you share this hope and meaning with someone who doesn't believe in Jesus? Because I think sometimes we let those opportunities go by to talk about the fact that we do have hope, the fact that we do have meaning, the fact that we do think our life has purpose. And it's good to sort of think about, what would I say if I had that opportunity? What would I tell somebody? So let's talk about that a little bit. And then when you're done talking, you can just go on home.